This is Phil Farron. I am driving home. It's Thursday today. It is episode, I keep forgetting to say this, it is episode 528 on our way to 2000. it's been a good week. A little few frustrations here and there. I think I mentioned last week we were trying to get some deployment going and it was not necessarily going in smooth. That unsmoothness has extended through the entire week. And in fact, got to be about Tuesday and I talked to the guys and said, okay, that's it, we're rolling back because we were not giving the customer a good experience. We really haven't found the cause of that problem. And in fact, I think the cause of the problem goes back easily for 18, 19, maybe not 18 months, a year. It goes back easily. We had moved to a new server for the web store, and there's always been some sporadic problems with how it calls web services, and the new secure acceptance stuff just seems to exacerbate those problems. And so come Monday, we're just gonna turn it on, you know, for a week, and let's just see how many problems we have to chase. Although in the process of all this, we did find that we were having some issues with one of the screens taking much longer to return than it should have. But the programmer who was in charge of that stuff over there was able to add an index, and then boom. So we had a screen that was going from 12 to 15 seconds to repaint, and it went down to sub-second response. So, hey, that's what we like to see. And it helped him on some of his other screens that he was doing with secure acceptance as well. So that was a win. And then I cleaned up some errors that were getting thrown into the log. We did discover in the process of all this that we've got some kind of a hacker bot that is attacking our Spanish language site. I looked back 3 days. I looked back to Monday at midnight. I think that's right. Yeah, Monday at midnight. And with our main web store sites, we had built the cart page, the shopping cart page, about 20,000 times in the space of 3 or 4 days. Well, the Spanish language site, we had built the shopping cart page 200,000 times, and it has less traffic. So when you look at the logs, you can see something is just pounding us. And what they're trying to do is they're trying to send in some sort of spurious malicious characters, and they're trying to, you know, get us to throw an error so that they can then expose some names so that they can possibly then do a SQL injection attack. And we've got our stuff, we think, protected against that, but every time they try that, we do throw an error in the logs. So we get quite a bit of activity in the logs. But you know what? We're holding them off. So it just means that when you're looking for some other stuff, it's kind of hard to find because there's a whole bunch of those "this was bad input" entries in the logs. Anyways, so aside from that, I was able to get some good stuff accomplished this week, and got a meeting. We're ramping up for a big roll up at the end of this month, but it's not my primary project. I'm just sort of overseeing it. And the guy who is actually going to be doing the rollout is a seasoned veteran programmer. And so he's got it under control. I've already warned everybody this is very complicated and there will be some few bumps along the road. But, you know, everyone seems ready and excited to move forward because it solves some problems they have had for 40 years now. Because the code that we're replacing is 40 years old. I mean that literally. It was written in the mid-70s. Has been tweaked, obviously. was originally written in the mid-70s. And, you know, it is the last piece that will get us off the old COBOL code. So this has been a project that's been many years in coming. And our programmer has been working on it diligently all these years. You know, has done a great job. So we've already, we have two different departments that use this code, and we've already cut the other department that has fewer users in it. We've already cut that department away from the old code, so that's already taken care of, and now we're going for the big papa. So, you know, told everybody at the end of the meeting today, be in prayer, pray for our programmer, pray that we'll, everything will go smooth, and, you know, and we'll move on. So it'll be exciting. It'll be exciting. But we still have several weeks here before we try that, because even at the end of the month, it won't be exactly at the end of the month before we turn the big crank. Before we turn the big crank, we'll have some little cranks that will start turning right at the beginning of the month. But cash receipts will have to close. That'll take a couple of days, and then there'll be a couple of days while we ramp up to try this one. So, you know, we'll just trust that it will all go well. Anyway, so that's good. Writing, I'm a little behind. Somewhere in the region of 1,700 words down, maybe 1,500 words down. You know, but that's okay. That's okay. I ran both for Sunday morning and for Sunday night at church, which of course Sunday is my 3,000 word day, which is, I mean, that's, I need 6-7 good, solid, concentrated hours to do the 3,000 words. And so, you know, I've got home from Sunday morning. By the time we picked up something and ate, etc., it was about 2 o'clock when I got started writing, and then, you know, turned around and ended up, I needed to do some research because I wasn't quite sure where we were going. So I spent a couple hours doing some research, trying to figure out where we were, doing some minor editing and all of that. And then turned around, tried to do a little bit of writing, but then I needed to be back at church at 5:45, and then by the time I got home, I did a little more. So instead of 3,000, I only got about 700. So, you know, I've been climbing steadily on it, but that's okay. Tomorrow I'll put out a big push, and we'll see if we can't get caught up. And then, you know, another 20. So if I can get 2,500 words tomorrow, I'll be close. And then if I can get 3,000 words on Friday, which is, I normally do 2,500. So, you know, we're close. It'll be fine. And even if I don't, I'm ahead. I'm way ahead. I'm like 6,000 words ahead. Got them in the bank. So all is well there. Family's good. Everything's good. It's just good. I was telling a buddy today that it's so funny because I'm doing this 2 times a week, 40-hour fasting thing, you know, where I'm stopping like at 8 o'clock the night before, then fasting all day, and then not eating until 12 o'clock the next day. So it's 40 hours worth. And I'm doing that 2 times a week, and I'm doing okay, you know. I'm functioning okay, getting work done. Then in the evenings, you know, I'm kind of having a breath mint or two just to kind of keep myself going and getting some writing done. But man, on Tuesdays and Thursdays, those are like good days. I get to eat today. Good day. It's a good day. So yeah, it's funny. So as I'm driving into work, I start getting happy. And about mid-morning, I start getting really happy. So it's good. It's good, it's good, it's good. It kind of breaks up the week and gives me something to look forward to. And, you know, it's fun. It's fun. So, needless to say, today was a good day. I've also discovered, to my great delight and happiness, I have known for some time that I have needed to eat more raw broccoli. Just broccoli. Needed to eat just broccoli. But it was always kind of a little push. I like broccoli, but, you know, by the time I get my salad built and it has everything else in it with the kale and the sauerkraut and the avocados and all that kind of stuff, I wouldn't quite get there. But I have discovered that after you fast for 40 hours, broccoli tastes really good. I mean, it's like it has sugar on it. So there you go. So I've started now taking, you know, a good, oh, it's probably, well, like today I had a sandwich bag stuffed full of broccoli, broccoli florets. So that's what, a cup and a half, maybe a cup and a half. So that's going to be good because I'm going to kind of make that my broccoli thing. So, because, I mean, I'm telling you, it's really good when you haven't eaten for a day. So that's a win. I think that's everything. Yeah, I think that's everything. Anyways, this week, tomorrow is Mother's Day. Well, Sunday is Mother's Day, so tomorrow is my homage to Mother's Day. And it's always fascinating to me to look and see how these deep engines are at work in our lives and what they are moving us towards, even at young ages. I was trying to think exactly when this happened, and at first I thought it was when I was 4 or 4 years old, but that seems awfully young for what I'm about to describe. I'm more inclined to think maybe it was when I was 10 or 11, but I have a distinct memory of my grandmother. I only have memories of one grandparent. I think my grandfather on my father's side died before I was born. I think my grandmother and grandfather on my mom's side died when I was just little. And so all I have really a memory of is Grandma Bessie. She was a sweetheart. She was like 4'11". She's just a sweetheart. Although she used to make my dad stay on the straight and narrow. I mean, she would grab a switch off the tree, you know, and strip the leaves off of it and take it to the back of his legs when he'd misbehave. But I have a distinct memory of her. And so I'm going to do one thing in honor of Mother's Day. I found a t-shirt that it's like a comic book cover, and it has a muscular woman on the front, you know, kind of with her muscles bulging, kind of crouched down in this attack position, and she's got two little kids behind her, and the title of the comic is Mama Bear, and it's got this image coming out from her back of this huge bear, kind of like an avatar of her, and she's saying, "Don't mess with my cubs," you know. So I had that, and I was looking for something to go with that, and I ended up looking at all kinds of stuff, couldn't find anything, and then I stumbled across, it's supposed to be like the Coca-Cola bear, but it's just a polar bear standing there smiling. So they're knee-high socks, just a polar bear standing there smiling, that's all it is. And I saw that, and I thought, oh, I can do that like as an homage to my grandmother, you know, because she was real sweet. So I thought, yeah. So I'll order those. So I ordered those. They supposedly came in today. I haven't seen them yet. And so I've got those knee-high socks that I'm going to have. And then I thought, you know, if I was really going to do an homage to my my grandmother, I need to reenact the most present memory I have of her, and the most present memory I have of her, is as a little boy sitting on the floor in her house while mom and dad were talking to her and everybody was talking, and she was wearing some kind of a long calf length pastel dress, kind of a grandma dress, you know. She was wearing that. She was listening and talking, and I have this memory of looking over at her and seeing that her knee highs were all bunched around her ankles. So, you know, even as, I don't know, goofy little 10-year-old boy, you know, I kind of looked at that, and the reaction that came up in my goofy little 10-year-old boy mind is, yeah, okay, that's not right. Which is just dumb. It's just dumb. That came from some deep subsystem, because she was a sweetheart. She was just a sweetheart. Who cares whether her knee highs are all baggy and sagging around her ankles? So, but I am going... I am going to get some of my wife's old knee highs that she never wears anymore, and I'm going to stretch them all out, just put on the polar bear socks and then put those on so they can just be all baggy around my ankles when I go to Walmart tomorrow. So I'm sure there will be a few people that will find that amusing. Some may not, but that's okay. So anyways, that's the Mother's Day thing. Today, I came across an article, and I'm going to make me a little prediction that by the time it's all said and done, that this is going to be the answer to this question. And we'll see. And if it is, great. And if it's not, that's fine too. You know, whatever. But I came across an article. It was a pretty interesting article. And the name of the article was The Mystery of Human Uniqueness. It's by Gary Marcus. It was published a couple of weeks ago, I think. The question is, what exactly makes our biology special? Now, I think the question is ill-formed. Because I think the question should be, what exactly makes humans special? But we'll go with his question for now. What exactly makes our biology special? And he starts off the article talking about how if you had a dozen human toddlers and you dropped them on a beautiful Polynesian island with shelter and enough to eat, but no computers, no cell phones, no metal tools, would they grow up to be human, like humans we recognize, or would they be, in essence, other primates? Would they invent language? Without the magic sauce of culture and technology, would humans be that different from chimpanzees? And he talks about the fact that since the early 70s, scientists across the biological sciences have been trying to figure out what it is about our biology that gave rise to what we have as humans. Because obviously, what we have accomplished as humans exceeds anything that any other animal species has done on this planet. I mean, dolphins don't build boats. Some would say that that's not an advance, but that's okay. That's all right. Maybe dolphins are just smart enough, as the guy said in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, to let us do all the building, and then they just come up and squeak at us, and we give them fish. And so when the planet is going to be blown up to make space for a new superhighway, hyperspace superhighways, the dolphins, as they're migrating off the planet, mentally, their parting words are to us are, so long and thanks for all the fish. I love the Hitchhiker's Guide series. So, some may not say that's an accomplishment, but frankly, it certainly looks like humans have accomplished more in terms of inventions and inventiveness and the creation of language and all those things than any other mammal has. So the question is, why? Why have we done that? And the general assumption among scientists of biological sciences, I'm getting my mail one moment, is that, of course, there must be something different about our biology. That's the general assumption. But in fact, over the years, there has been some difficulty in coming up with, let's see, this is the net. Let me just check below and see if we have anything down here. Nope, nothing down there. Okay. The general assumption then, if you're just going to have biology and that's all you're going to judge against, is that, well, there must be something different about biology. And so they've been trying, you know, they say they've been trying to find out what the difference were, and one of the things that the guy comments in the articles is that the main hypothesis was behavioral. Well, humans are the only animals to use tools. Humans are the only animals to have culture. Humans are the only animals to teach their young. But he said over time, as they've observed closer other animals, you find those behaviors in other animals. So what has, you know, truly made the difference? Went in a little too far there. So what has then truly made the difference? So some people have said, well, it must be in the brain then. So they said, okay, well, the human brain is divided into two hemispheres, left and right, but so it is in chimpanzees. Well, about a division of the frontal, temporal, parietal, and occipital lobes. Yes, chimpanzees have that too. And so, for that matter, do horses, cats, and squirrels. The basic organization in the brain is something we share with all mammals. Now, could it be a six-layer sheet, you know, wrinkly portions, neocortex? Nope, chimps have that. What about the Broca area, et cetera, et cetera? He goes on and on and on and on and on. So, and he said the other challenge here is that brain regions don't wear name tags. He said instead their nature and boundaries must be deduced based on a host of factors such as physical landmarks, hills and valleys of the folded cortical tissue, shapes of neurons, the way in which we respond to different chemical stains. So he said, even with the most advanced technologies, it's a tough business, sort of like trying to tell whether you are in Baltimore or Philadelphia by looking out the window of a moving train, because the two cities were built out of similar raw materials over a similar time frame. Many of their parts look superficially similar. So, you know, they ask questions about the asymmetry between left hemisphere and right hemisphere, and blah, 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 they go on and like, but the more they look, the more they see, there just doesn't seem to be that much of a difference. And he said, when we look at our genomes, the situation is no different. He said, we share a vast part of our DNA with chimpanzees. So, you know, he asked the question, well, if our lives are so different, why is our biology so similar? And he says, well, that's because, you know, we evolved from a common ancestor, blah, 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 blah. Okay, that's fine. So and then he goes on to describe how evolution, you know, works, which is always fascinating to me, you know, because we've talked about this portion of it. You know, it all works by chance, and except it's like this big computer program, and like the MIT guys were telling the evolutionary biologist guys, as soon as you identified DNA as information, now you have a problem, because we don't know of any program in existence that's made better by just randomly changing lines of code. But that's neither here nor there. And so then he goes on to talk about language, and he says language, regardless of how it is instantiated in our brain, represents a comparatively tiny cognitive enhancement relative to the mental machinery that we inherited from our last common ancestor. So the same is true for the underlying biology of each of the cognitive innovations. And then he comes to a conclusion by saying, if it seems like scientists are trying to find the basis of human uniqueness in the brain and they're looking for a neural needle in a haystack, it's because they are. Whatever makes us different is built on a bedrock of a billion years of common ancestry. Humans will never abandon the quest to prove that they are special, but nor can we escape the fact that our minds are a modest tweak on an ancient plan that originated millions of years before we came onto the scene. Okay, so that's his conclusion. That
you know, our brains are the result of, you know, this random mutation that just happened to prove beneficial. And I used to do a little thing. I haven't done it much recently, so I may not get it all correct. But I used to do this little soliloquy on, I am an evolutionist. Atheistic evolutionist. Therefore, I believe that all life came about as random, unplanned, potentially detrimental mutations. I'm an evolutionist, therefore I believe that mammals came about as random, unplanned, non-beneficial, whatever. But you get all the way down to, I'm an evolutionist, therefore I believe I as a human are a complete result of random mutations, most of which were not beneficial. I'm an evolutionist. I believe that my brain is the result of random, unplanned, spontaneous mutations, most of which were not beneficial. I am an evolutionist. I believe that my brain has the capability to decide exactly how life came about. See, the problem that I have with atheistic evolution is that you have to conclude that we may well share common delusions that mean it is impossible for us to truly trust our conclusions. I'm not very hip on that. So my answer to something like what makes our biology special is nothing. Now, if you want to ask the question, what makes humans special, that's something else. And I am convinced that really what makes humans special is the same thing that God said in his word, and that is that he formed man out of the dust of the earth. Whether he allowed it to take 1 billion, 2 billion years, it doesn't really matter. But at some point then he breathed into man the breath of life. And there is within human DNA this region called the human accelerated regions, or regions, HAR they call them, human accelerated regions, that in us, suddenly those regions spiked in a relatively short amount of time. And I'm more than comfortable saying God reached down and went, okay, well, that animal's close enough. Flip, 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 flip. You know, making the correct tweaks, letting those tweaks settle in, and then going, okay, I can work with that. And in doing so, he connected us to him. Because it says that Jesus Christ holds all things together, that without him nothing was made, and all things consist by him. And I think our uniqueness as human beings, as mammals on this planet, is directly related to the fact that he holds everything together and that he chooses to open up his creativity and his wonder to us, and that elevates us to something more. Consciousness. It gives us this consciousness. It gives us this ability to form languages. And in fact, there have been some interesting studies that seem to indicate that the brain is built for language, that it doesn't quite develop correctly if it doesn't have language, that it needs language. So it's all very interesting. It'll be interesting to see what the scientists can come up with, but if I was gonna guess, I don't think they're really gonna find anything that different, because the difference is coming way down deep into the quantum level, where there's interactions that are happening between us and the Spirit of God, whether those people know Jesus Christ or not, because Jesus loves the world. So Jesus is down there whispering to every human being, whether they name his name or not, because he loves them. And because, as Paul tells us, when Jesus died, he reconciled the world, all of us, to himself. And God no longer counts our sins against us, which is a really cool thing. And then the question only becomes, do we want to avail ourselves of those whispers? Do we want to avail ourselves of the partnership that Jesus offers us every day? And if we will keep our hearts quiet, and if we will listen for him, and if we will rejoice in him and be grateful, it's just amazing how we can move through our days and he'll be saying, oh, let's try this. Oh, let's try that. Oh, let's try this. And life is good. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.